evening. I'd like to call this Planning Commission work session to order for Thursday, January the 4th, 2024. My name is Brian Halbert, and I am acting as interim chair for the Clark County Planning Commission. But before we begin tonight, I would like to announce that our Planning Commission work sessions are hybrid, both in person and by way of WebEx. That thing's annoying. Okay. For the virtual and in-person members of the Planning Commission and staff, please ensure that your microphones are turned off or muted unless you are speaking. There will be no public comment during this work session, but members of the public can watch or listen. This evening's agenda is planned as follow. And our agenda is the biannual code amendments presented by Brent Davis.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Brent Davis. I'm the Land Use Review Manager in Community Development. And what I have for you tonight is the current round of our biannual code amendments. Next slide, please. So by way of background, we periodically batch groups of minor amendments to the county code for the council to consider and hopefully adopt. The scope of these types of changes include correction of Scrivener's errors, updates to references to things like state statutes, clarifying of standards where we run across language that doesn't fully make sense, and then also we do have some flexibility for minor policy changes, and so that's the scope of the amendments we're asking you to look at tonight. So we have historically called these the biannual code amendments. We're currently doing them more on an annual cycle, but that's just the history. Just also to note that there is another batch of amendments that are not to Title 40 that are not coming before the commission, but they are included in the SEPA documentation, so we didn't want to have two simultaneous SEPA processes, and we're going to bring both of those batches to council at the same time. Next slide, please. So a little bit about the process. So we started the process by gathering proposed updates identified by staff. Some things came directly to us from council, suggestions from our Development Engineering Advisory Board, as well as customers in our review process. So we drafted preliminary code language, and then we reviewed that with DEEB in October of the last fall, and DEEB made a recommendation to council to carry all of the proposed amendments forward. We held a council work session on the 18th of October to get approval to proceed with this batch. We sent 60-day notice to Commerce for the Title 40 updates. It's part of the required process for Title 40. We've conducted legal review of the proposed revisions, and a SEPA DNS was issued yesterday, is out for public comment, and the comments will close prior to the hearing in 2 weeks. And then we're having this work session tonight, and then the next step will be taking this before council. We have not scheduled that process yet. That'll be coming in the next, hopefully we'll be doing that sometime in March. Just a little bit about the SEPA process. I think I've touched on all this, but the DNS is out for public comment, and just, again, just making the distinction between, I'm sorry, Bart, next slide, please. That there are two batches of code amendments and only one of them is before you tonight. Next slide, please. So just, I'm just gonna give you a brief overview of the I guess, more substantive proposed changes, and then just leave it to the commission for questions on any of the changes that are in the documents that were provided. So There's a revision to the definition of isolated wetlands that is intended to address comments that ecology has had on the shoreline amendments that were adopted last March. It's been a lengthy process with ecology getting final approval. They had a minor concern, something that they missed in their normal review process, and they've agreed that we can resolve that by changing a Title 40 definition as opposed to going back into the shoreline master program. We're revising the size and access standards for rural ADUs to align with what's being proposed for urban ADUs under the housing options study. Just trying to simplify that process and making it, you know, similar to what's being proposed for the urban area. We're removing garages from the cottage housing floor area. This was a request from DEEB. And the reason this is not included in the housing options code amendments that are coming forward and have, I think, have already been to the Planning Commission, is that there was specific direction from council about a year and a half ago to do it as a biannual code amendment. And we are just getting to it now. So the next one, we're clarifying that shared recreation space for multifamily housing is truly shared and does not include private recreation space. There's some language in the current code that's problematic in that regard. We're at the direction of council, we're increasing the public notice radius for land use applications. So we're going from 300 feet in the urban area to 500 feet and from 500 to 1,000 in the rural area. We're proposing to require a pre-application conference for major home businesses. These are a type 2 review that are currently exempt from pre-application. The issue that we're running into is we have a lot of applicants coming in for these types of home businesses that clearly don't understand the limitations in the code and are proposing projects that are just not even close to complying. And we would like to have them come in for a pre-app to do some due diligence and to get a better understanding before they submit their application. And then lastly, we're making some changes to the language and requirements for the neighborhood meeting in our Type 2A process. This is a meeting that the developer has to hold prior to submitting their application in lieu of a public hearing. The first change is that we're proposing to change the word neighborhood to community, and this is because our neighborhood association coordinator, their office, has seen that there's been a lot of confusion about this meeting and having neighborhood association connections, which it does not. So we're hoping that changing neighborhood to community will clarify that. And then we have allowed through COVID those meetings to be held on a virtual platform, and we are proposing to continue to allow that as an option, and we're codifying that. So that's next slide, please. So basically, we're just requesting the Planning Commission to give us feedback and a recommendation to council. Next slide, please. And that's it for my presentation. Thank you. And if you have any questions, we can bring up the proposed amendments and have a discussion.
Yeah, thanks. There is a lot of proposed amendments here. And reading through them, some of them were really easy and others were, I think you hit on the big ones, the highlights of them. So, Jack, you got any questions you want to start with?
Yeah. Okay, so just a couple questions. A lot of it's just clarification, if we can. So in section one, we're talking about shooting ranges and eliminating a review inspections of shooting ranges.
Yeah, so that is not a Title 40 amendment. So that is in the batch that is not coming before the commission. So there are two batches, and there are two documents. You should have two documents that look very similar, and one is labeled Title 40, and one is.
So we're only looking at the Title 40 amendments?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Correct. So the shooting range is in Title 9, I believe it is.
Yeah. Why was it included in our packet?
Because it's part of the SEPA. We combined the two, so we only had to do one SEPA process.
And ultimately, they'll go to council together. But council can adopt non-Title 40 actions without them going to the commission.
Okay.
It's a bonus.
Okay, got it. It's a bonus. So we have no input on... The community has no input on the section nine.
Only to the extent that they can participate in the council process, and we will be, it is part of the SEPA, so we will be getting comments from the public through the SEPA process. We will compile responses to those comments for the council.
Okay. But as far as staff wise, you don't want our input on any of these sections.
That's correct. I mean, correct. If you have comments, we'd be happy to have them, but they're not going to be part of the Planning Commission process or recommendation.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess I'm not sure what I'm reviewing.
Title 40.
I missed that portion. I got it printed off this section of this stuff.
You used to do the Title 41.
No, I missed the Title 41. So.
Well, I somehow got
ahead.
Title 40.
All right.
And I apologize for the confusion.
No, as of right now, I don't have any questions. So, Eldon?
Yeah.
So, this is Eldon. So, how were the increases in the radius calculated? Went from 300 to 500 for urban and 500 to 1,000? Is there a reasoning for that?
We just looked at what other jurisdictions are. The council expressed an interest in getting more public participation.
I think it's a great idea. I was just curious how.
Yeah, we just looked at other jurisdictions, and some were where we are currently. Some were at like 1,500 feet, and we kind of found a middle ground and went for the 500 and 1,000.
Okay. And then the major home businesses, that was defined as there's a list of what businesses apply to that. Is that right?
Or yeah, it's there are some specific uses. I don't have those off the top of my head, but it's also has to do with scale. So the major home business can use more of their residential property for their business operation. But there are specific types of businesses that are major just by the nature of what they are.
And those are clarified?
In the code. It specifies which ones are major.
And the reason you're including the pre-application process, because people were confused when they're submitting their application? Or?
We are getting a lot of applications, and we get a lot of cases of these come to us through code enforcement. People have started a business operation without getting the proper land use review, and the scale of their operation or the types of business that they're trying to run on their residential property is not something that can be approved in the code. And so rather than having them find that out after they've paid a type 2 review application fee and are 6 to 8 weeks into their application process, when we get our early issues comments back to them, we just feel it would be better to have them come in and propose what they want, then have a discussion with us about what the code allows, and then have an opportunity to go back and make the revisions before they formally submit their application.
Are you seeing an increase in applications for home businesses?
No, not necessarily. We do have a substantial number that are in code enforcement.
Could you give us an example of what a substantial business that would people are coming in with?
Well, I can,
just kind of
yeah,
reference.
I mean, you know, we For instance, we have a case right now where an individual has three businesses, and they're operating on an R5 residential property. They have a septic pumping business, several trucks and employees. They have a carpet cleaning business with multiple vehicles, and they have a porta potty business. And the major home business only allows you to use 2% of your property for your business operation, as in terms of property area. And then there are specific types of businesses that are just prohibited as home businesses, things like an automotive repair shop, that kind of thing. So, we're just seeing a lot of cases where people are trying to get approval for something that we just cannot, and what they need to do to pare it down and make it approvable, especially if they're already operating, is challenging.
That's all I had.
I see Carl's still online, but is he not? He's not able to speak. Okay.
I don't think he's at all online.
Okay.
So he must be having connection issues.
Sure.
We do have Steve.
Oh.
So you could ask if Steve has comments.
Steve, if you're online, do you have any questions you'd like to pose?
I don't at this time. Thank you. I appreciate the presentation, and I don't think I have any questions.
Yeah, I don't have any further questions either. I'll go back and read more of Title 40, but I appreciate the way you hit the highlights on it. And just looking through it, there is quite a few changes and cleanups. So,
all right, thank you.
Jose, are you next?
All right, good evening, Planning Commission members. Jose Alvarez with Clark County Community Planning. Just wanted to give you updates on some of the things we've been working on in relation to the comprehensive plan. Sort of in the last 3 months or so, we've had public hearings with council on the climate public participation plan, which is going to be a required new element of the comprehensive plan. So there was a couple of hearings with the council on that. I think we have recruiting for one of the advisory committees that is going to be part of the sort of climate element, doing that work. We've had contract with consultants to help out with our EIS work for the comp plan, and also specifically on the climate change element, and helping us out doing that work. The other thing we've been working on is really an update to the vacant buildable lands model, so that it can run based on zoning. We've had a lot of we've had some turnover in our GIS. Bob Poole had run that for a long time, and so it just needed to be updated in order to do this transition, in order to comply with the legislation. I think it's HB 1220 that was passed by the legislature. So we've been engaged with the cities on reviewing that, and moving forward with our next steps to do the allocation process for the population, housing, and employment, and the vacant buildable lands model historically has been something that we've used as a way to do that allocation. And I just kind of wanted to share with you all that housing analysis planning tool that comes from the state and that we're required to use, and just kind of run through what that looks like, and sort of what the impacts it'll have on the community as we go forward. Let me share my screen. Yeah, almost. Second one. Okay. Go. Make that bigger? That's limited.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so let's start with, let's see. So the projection year is out to 2045. The population target is based on the OFM range that the council selected, which was the 718,000, was the expected population 2045. And so based on that, the planning tool uses a 2020 estimate of the existing housing capacity countywide. And then from that, it creates an estimate of the amount of housing needed for the planning period. In this case, it's 2020 to 2045. We've been working with Commerce, since it's supposed to be a 20-year plan, about making some, using at least a 2023 or a more recent vintage for the baseline. This tool is very rigid, and there's not much flexibility in using it. The two, there's three sort of levers that the local jurisdictions can pull. The first is the population target. The second is this under column D, there's sort of a blue column of user input, the shares of population, county population. And this is what typically the VBLM would be the tool that we're starting the conversation with the cities on the share of growth. And then from that, you can see that it will provide an estimate of the number of housing units that are needed over that planning horizon. So if you, we can look at, let me see. Let's go to the next spreadsheet that I have, which is the same spreadsheet, but the same data, but something that can be adjusted, and I included some column totals in there so you can hopefully make that out, even though it's very difficult to see. The allocation that historically has been done is based on that population, and the allocation is provided to the cities, and that's what they have to plan for, and that's pretty much the end of the story. What the state is doing now is requiring us to do a further look and make sure that they've broken down that allocation number by income bands. So the from 0 to 120% of area median income. The columns in blue represent 0 to 80%. The sort of pinkish peach color is 80 to 120%, and the green is greater than 120%. Now, Commerce only requires us to demonstrate that we're providing housing in the 0 to 120. The 120, greater than 120, they're just including so that the numbers add up, but we're not essentially, we're not required to show that we're satisfying that. If you look at the columns at the bottom, it has a breakdown of what those individual ranges are by percentage. So for there's two columns for the non-PSH and PSH. Permanent supportive housing is what the acronym stands for. I knew that would come. Yes. So the non-permanent supportive housing is 12,800 units, 11%. The next column is the permanent supportive housing, which is 7%. The 30 to 50, which is 15, and then the 50 to 80 is another 15%. So if you go to the column on the right, that's highlighted in blue, that's a summary of those four columns. And so everything less than 80% totals 48% of your total housing units that you got to plan for over the next horizon, 20-year horizon. That's a lot. And so that's one of the sort of issues that we're trying to work through with the different jurisdictions. The other thing that we can do is, as long as we show that those totals are being met countywide, there's latitude within and between jurisdictions to try to address that housing need. I spoke with someone from the town of Yakult today because they were looking at this and they were very concerned, and they don't have sewer, and so that might be something that may not make sense to require them to provide that level of housing because they don't have sewer. We've always included them with the anticipation of them getting sewer over the 20-year period, but that hasn't happened, so that might be something that we adjust where another jurisdiction might take their share of that capacity.
The city of Vancouver, it looks like they have the lion's share of this, 50% of this, more than that, 80%.
Right, currently. Yeah, and so there's another tool, another allocation methodology, allocation B here, that the way that the first allocation works is everyone gets the same percentage of the growth. Allocation B is trying to equalize it over time so that everyone has the same amount at the end of the period. And so with a couple of these, you can see that this is line 13 here, where the city of Camas, they 74% of their housing would have to be less than 80% using this allocation methodology. And then for the city of Vancouver, it would be 20%. Oh no, that's the existing. The 20% is what for the growth increment, because they have so much already.
Question.
Yes.
Jack Haroon. So what happens if a jurisdiction says we don't want that type of growth? Mm-hmm. And I've had conversations with previous mayors of some of these jurisdictions that specifically have said that, and I've heard that like vocalized. And they said that's more of a Vancouver kind of thing and not what we have going out here in Mayberry. Was the quote. So how is that from a county perspective, how is that dealt with, or how is that, is there an enforcement mechanism or some kind of lever to pull if a jurisdiction goes, not us, or is that a state level? Is there like state laws that govern that? How does that work?
So this is a new requirement from the state. The county is responsible for the planning, and so and the council is going to have to agree to the allocation. So that's going to be a conversation at the council level and with those jurisdictions. So we'll see what happens, but this is our first go around with this specific tool that actually requires this sub-allocation level at this sort of income band level. So we haven't done this before.
So is it a negotiation between the county and the city jurisdictions, or is it something that can be flat out mandated by the county councilors and imposed upon the city?
This is Oliver. I don't think it's going to be a mandate from the county. I think the issue is that when the state put this tool together, they determined that, and this is statewide, that we have been underbuilding. So this tool did account for that underbuilding, if you will, what we would have been building to make up for the housing need. So what that means is that, A, with the conversation we're having with our local jurisdiction, just to get to agreeing on the capacity, as Jose indicated earlier, what we have done in the past is just allocate the population and job their share, and they do whatever they want to do, however they want to grow. I could see the same thing happening here, because the way that the bill is written, I believe the city of Vancouver is required to plan for 6-plex. I believe Camas and is it Washougal? I think they're close to 4-plex, or if not up to 6. So they have no wiggle room. They have just to show how they're going to accommodate that. They may make a decision, which the county is not going to mandate them to do, but they can make a decision, A, we want to upzone some areas. We want to do something within our downtown or revitalizing our downtown, whatever that may be. That will be their call, but they will be required by statute to show how they're going to meet those requirements as the bills require them to do. The county is doing the same thing. How we get to build all these housing units is yet to be seen, but we are required to unlike what we have done in the past. This time it's not encouraged anymore. It's, you have to plan for this number of units based on the growth that you have chosen. So we will have no choice except to show how we're going to do that. For example, you have participated, I believe, in the Housing Option Implementation Code, whereby we are proposing ADU, duplex, triplex, fourplex, sixplex, and townhouses in the single family zone. Now, whether that requires us to rezone those areas, we have not had that conversation, but you will have the option, if the council approves that code, for you to look in your, assuming you want to develop in a single family zone, you will have the option to do ADU, triplex, fourplex, or townhouses within that zone. So that's how some of this could happen in the future. There's also going to be a provision that we monitor what is happening after the adoption of the plan to see how well we're coming close to meeting the housing needs. That's how we're going to see whether this is going to work or not. As Jose mentioned, the 120 above, we're just going to show what the number is, but you don't have to really plan for that or show how you're going to meet that. You know, there's some of this emergency housing. There's certain things we haven't done in the past. Now they're requiring us to provide for that. So that it's not a mandate, but it's coming from the state that you have to. It's up to the cities to decide what they need to do. For example, we all know in the case of Vancouver, they have been building apartments. So you're not going to say, okay, we'll give it all to Vancouver because they've been building apartments. Other communities will have their share of that.
Which I understand. I guess my question is, how is that? I know how cities can get there, but how do we impose that from a county perspective? Is this something that we tell Camas, you know, or Yakult or whoever, you will do this, or you will give us a plan to give to the state to demonstrate compliance? Or is there any kind of that? I guess that was my question. Is it a negotiation between what allocation is the battleground going to take versus?
There's a negotiation on the allocation, and that's what's going to determine it. What each jurisdiction has to provide over that time frame. So that's where we are sort of now, is in that negotiation. We've updated the model. We were getting input and feedback from the jurisdictions to make sure that that was, there weren't any issues with the model, that it was accurate. We're pretty close with that and hope to have that finalized and be able to share with the public soon. But we wanted to get the city's input on that because that's really going to be the driver for the next step in the allocation. And it's that sort of, because it's new for them too, and that horse trading of, you know, and you know, like I said, well, does it really make sense for some jurisdictions to get some of these things where they don't have, it wouldn't make sense to locate in some areas like Yakult. But that's going to be really kind of the crux of it. And hopefully we can get to some resolution with the jurisdictions and council supportive of that and move forward.
Commissioner, to the extent that any of the jurisdictions don't comply with the state law, just like with the county, their planning can be appealed to the Growth Management Hearings Board. So that's kind of the ultimate enforcer there. And then the whole process of what happens when there's an appeal.
So this permanent housing needs doesn't take into consideration whether it's home ownership or rentals, right? It includes everything.
Right. And I think some of the conversations we've had about some of the existing housing that meets those income requirements. So, I mean, you could have people who are that in that 30 to 50 or 50 to 80% range that are retirees who are living on Social Security and they've owned their home for a long time. But to have new housing that gets you to that same place is going to be very difficult unless it's some type of subsidized or housing. And so that's some of the nuance with some of the existing meeting that criteria and then how you move forward with new to accommodate the new growth.
Steve, all right, do you have any questions?
No questions. Thank you very much.
Jack, you good?
Yeah, no, thank you for the presentation. I would love if we could get some screenshots of this information, like posted on our notes or something, because I think it's super valuable information. And then maybe some annotation of some of what, you know, PSH is and non-PSH, so for us to kind of grind through, because there's a lot to digest here.
And Jose, right now, you're saying that this is, you're just giving us an interim update that the final data is still yet to be published.
Correct. Yes.
So, yeah. And
we are still having conversation with our local jurisdictions, and there may be other tweaks we might make to the model based on that additional input from our local jurisdiction before we post everything for the entire public to see where we are.
Fair, thanks. Is there was the comp plan update, then there's the status update of the comp plan. Is that the same two line items, just worded differently?
Worded differently, but it's the same thing. Giving you the first piece about decisions that the council have made about bringing a consultant on board to help us with the environmental review, approving the plan, the public participation plan for the work on the climate bill, and then having a consultant on board also to help us with that, and committees to serve on three committees have been is ongoing. We will have that very soon, beginning their work and the consultant coming on board. So that's the work on the climate bill to include a climate chapter as one of the elements in this process is beginning. And it may be in the next week or two, don't hold me to that, but we will come to provide you a more detailed information on this with the agreement that we have reached with our local jurisdiction before we go to council.
Sounds good. And is there other comments or business that we need to take care of here?
I don't have anything else new. Nope.
Do you know the status of other applicants for the positions on the Planning Commission?
No, we went into the holiday period. Looked like everything came to a standstill. The council, I believe their last meeting was maybe December 6th or something like that, and they didn't have any additional meetings. So, but they're back now. I'm sure that they will start interview this month, and hopefully we'll have who they appointed.
So in 2 weeks, we have a Planning Commission public hearing, and do we have enough members to have a quorum for that meeting?
I anticipate that we will. I will be What I can say is that I know the council, I don't know whether it's the 10th or when they will be doing the interview, and hopefully that same day they will announce who they have chosen, and it's likely that you will have a quorum. You know, four is a quorum, but it's my understanding that they will likely make a decision before the 18th.
I think right now there'd be three at the hearing, but I'm out that week.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you, and I'm sure. And there will be four.
Oh, yeah, but Steve and Carl. So there's four.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, Steve and
Sorry.
Carl, and then Jack and Alden. That will be four. Yeah, if everybody comes, you're right. But, yeah, I will make it known through the county manager that we really need the council to act as quickly as they can.
Okay, any other business? Then we are adjourned for the night. Thank you.
Thank you.